Static. Noise. That's all we hear, or so it seems. Where would you go? What would you pay to hear the truth? Good news. It's free. And nearby. The Bible is God's truth. At the Escondido United Reformed Church, Chris Gordon preaches Christ the truth from God's Word every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway, 760-745-1679, eurc.org. Contending for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
I was recently asked in an interview on a news network if God is separating people out right now. And my answer was absolutely. God is marking his people. It's not with the old kind of dispensational model of God taking a big ink pen or writing some people taking the mark of the beast and writing 666 or God writing some kind of sign on them. It's a spiritual mark. A spiritual mark of identification. There are those identified with the darkness, and there are those identified with the light. Baptism signifies that we have been washed with Christ, that we belong to him. The Lord has marked his people. The Lord has set apart his people. And there is a major conflict happening right now between the darkness and the light, and it's escalating. We see all the events happening and unfolding in our world all around us. The tragic things, the terrible things, the escalation of them all at once, it tells us that we are moving quickly to the final judgment. It tells us that the day is at hand. It tells us that God, through this, is making it very clear who his people are. So I have a question, dear listener. Are you a child of the light or a child of the darkness? This is the theme today in Exodus as we look at the ninth plague, where God brings darkness on the land of Egypt and separates his people so that there was light in Goshen. Are you, dear listener, in the light? Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. As always, we want to direct you to our website at agradio.org. agradio.org. Do please download the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Write to us. All of your correspondence we read and we're so thankful for. If you can support us, all of your support goes to continue to bring Abounding Grace Radio to you. Again, agradio.org. Find us on Facebook. Download apps for your smartphones. And there's also a mailing address there on the website so that you can write to us to our P.O. Box, which is 732 Linden, Washington, 98264. Again, P.O. Box 732 Linden, L-Y-N-D-E-N, Washington, 98264. Here is the message today from Exodus chapter 10, which I have titled, The Day God Turned Out the Lights.
One of the things that Jesus said will take place after the tribulation of those days in which we live is that the sun one day will no longer give its light. In other words, he is going to turn out those lights for good. I've often thought, do we ever think about what it's going to be like or what it would be like to have absolutely no light? We walk into a room, we sit in a room now, we hit a light switch and voila, there's light. We take all of that for granted, of course, but what a blessing it is that we have lights to turn on. We don't even know how we would handle it if the lights that we have created went out. You know? The electricity, our computers, our lives would stop as we know it if our lights went out. You ever thought about if God turned out his lights? Can you imagine the problem of that? What if the sun went out for good one day? I raise that this morning because in the scriptures, God often uses darkness to describe the coming day of the Lord, the coming day of judgment, that ultimately they are going to be people outside of Jesus. The Lord said over and over, they're going to be cast into outer darkness. Darkness is often used in the scriptures to describe the spiritual condition of people's hearts. You have all this use of darkness. Well, as we come to the ninth plague this morning in Exodus, God turns out the lights on Egypt. He hits the switch. And in the midst of this, little Goshen remains lit up. It's a remarkable thought. It's an imagery to try to get. Little Goshen and the people of Israel are in the light. But all around them, thick darkness, the lights have been turned off, thick darkness has filled Egypt. It's a powerful plague. It's a unique plague, maybe one we have not given the attention to as we should. But think about it. It has the effect this morning of making everyone ask, if that's true, if that's going to happen, am I in the light and am I headed toward the light, remaining in that light, or am I in the darkness, heading ultimately, permanently for outer darkness? That's the ninth plague of Exodus. That's the question. God is judging Egypt with the plague of darkness to teach, if you will, the world for the need of his light. How to find that light. That's the ninth plague. What we have before us is this precursor to the final plague of death. So notice this has run its course. It has gotten very serious. And it's no surprise that what we find just before the end, just before the final judgment on the nation of Egypt, final judgment, which is death, is that the lights go out. The coming of the Lord in scriptures is usually preceded by a commotion of the stars, the luminaries, and the sun, and the moon. Revelation says this, that the fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast. Think about how this applies to Pharaoh. The fifth angel poured out his bowl on the throne of the beast, and its kingdom was plunged into darkness. People gnawed their tongues in anguish. Before I answer the question this morning as to what this plague all meant, it's really important to understand what has happened to Pharaoh. I really believe he is the key to understanding this. He represents that nation. He represents those people. And what God is teaching us about him gives us some context here of why we have come to the end, why we now have reached the end of the plague cycles, ultimately now next to end in death. We see that at the end of this plague this morning in verse 28. When Pharaoh says to Moses, "Get away from me." Did you notice how abrupt and strong that ending was? "Get away from me. You better take care that you..." Now think of the arrogance of this. "You never see my face again. If you see it again, you die." Moses says, "As you say, it's done. Over." I don't think we realize what a decisive moment this was. This is the end. Pharaoh just himself sealed his doom. "You better never look upon me again." That's the end. This was last call. Ever thought about that? Last call? That day, essentially, the lights went out forever in Egypt. Even though this was just 3 days, the lights were out forever in Egypt. Of course, in the promises of the gospel, the Lord would open that door to Egypt again. But I mean, for that nation at that time. What the Bible calls reprobation is really presented in front of us this morning. We don't like that word. It's a tough word. It's a word that we've not given a lot of thought about. But here we have it presented in a sense that Pharaoh himself has given himself over. Ephesians says that occurs, of course. Ephesians says people do that when they harden their heart. It starts kind of, we might think, innocently, and it works its way out by drifting to a hardness of heart and giving oneself over. Ephesians says having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that's in them, because of the blindness of their hearts, who being, here it is, past feeling, they don't feel any more of what they do, they have given themselves over. Key verse. Pharaoh just said, I'm done. It's over. No more. Moses, you better never gaze on me again. It's a sobering point of the passage. The light is now gone at Pharaoh's own word. Egypt is now, at this point, past hope. The next thing is death. I'm going to come back to this, but I believe that helps us understand and set the some kind of context and help for what's going on in this plague, as it is the final last call for Egypt. It's the final last call for Pharaoh. The Lord is using darkness here to show us what ultimately is the outcome, that people in the darkness and walking in the darkness, it's going somewhere. You don't stay neutral. There's a path people walk. And this morning, the text is explaining what that darkness is like. The text is explaining where it's leading people, and it's so important that we then think about how the text shows us the light, coming to the light, the necessity for remaining in the light. And those are the things I want to consider, what the darkness is like, where it's leading, and the call to come to the light. Look at verse 21. The Lord says there to Moses in verse 21, as we open up this ninth plague, then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, a darkness to be felt. Wow. By this point, Egypt is systematically destroyed, by the way. I mean, the thing is in ruins. It has been a complete reversal of creation. If you look at it, it's kind of come full circle here. A complete reversal of creation, the waters, the beasts, the insects, the creation, and now light and darkness. All of this has been reversed on them in ultimate acts of judgment. And everything now, the waters were hit, the creatures were turned against him, and now the luminaries that were in place, the Lord has just summoned them and just flipped the switch. There's a reason God chose darkness next to last, didn't he? Moses, on numerous occasions, told us that one of God's purposes specifically was to knock over and to destroy the gods of Egypt. That's what these plagues are doing. The God is assaulting their gods. When we come to this, darkness may not seem that great. I mean, when I first read it, I thought, oh, darkness, you know, we could handle that a little bit, couldn't we? Lights going out, maybe? A couple days? No one really, when they come to this text, no one really thinks of this as a bad plague. But we really should begin with, this morning, thinking about what they believed about the light. That may help us a little bit, because darkness may not seem as threatening as what we've already experienced. I'm going to suggest it's the worst of threats. Egyptians and Egypt was obsessed with the sun. This is not surprising. Everyone knows this about ancient Egypt. Like everyone else, there were a whole bunch of gods connected with the sun. But let me just say, throughout history and every primitive civilization, there have always been people, there have always been leaders, there have always been nations that have idolized and worshiped the sun. Whether it be the Aztecs or the Incas, you could go through many, many, many who bowed down to the sun. I think even of one of those groups, it may have been the Aztecs, who took an obsidian knife every year, and they went out and they took a victim, they took a person, and they would cut out the heart, the beating heart, and hold it up to the sun. There were a whole pantheon of gods in Egypt surrounding the sun. Aten was the deified sun disk. Atum was the god they believed who caused the sun to set every night. He is sometimes depicted as a black bull carrying the sun disk between his horns. But nobody held as much esteem, as much greatness, as much honor as the great sun god, and I'm sure you've heard his name throughout history, Ra. Amun-Ra, the sun god. I really don't know how to properly convey how powerful this god was to the Egyptians. Every morning they would rise and they would sing a praise song to Amun-Ra, just like the Nile. There is none like you, Ra. You know what they thought? The life-giving power of Ra, every time they saw the sun, has risen upon us today. Engraved in Egypt were the words, Ra, I am the great God who came into being of myself, who has no opponent among the gods. The real offense to this idolatry is who they believed was Ra's son. Think about this. Do you know who Pharaoh was in Egyptian religion? The incarnation and the son of Ra. Interesting. He was most of all a sun worshiper. Not only every morning did he go out to the water, but he went out before the sun, and he had so much affection for this god because this god was his father. Pharaoh was known as the son of Ra, the personal embodiment of the solar god. Pharaoh alone on earth was known as the living representative and incarnation of the sun god. Think of the offense of this for a moment. Think of the offense and think of Satan, what he's just done. I mean, you want to talk about an antichrist? They've uncovered that this was said about Pharaoh. He looks upon Ra when he rises. Be joyful, entire land. Good times have come. The Lord has ascended into all the lands, and orderliness has gone down to its throne. The king of Upper and Lower Egypt, Lord of millions of years, great in kingship, just like Ra, who overwhelms Egypt with festivals. The son of Ra, who is more excellent than any king. We have also found this. The name of the king is in the sky like that of Ra. Nobles rejoice when they see him. The populace gives him praise in his role of the child. As one pastor noted, this is what children in school were taught to say about Pharaoh. That was the secular education. That's what Moses got, by the way. A son of the covenant was trained in the secular schools to say that about Pharaoh. Remarkable. By the way, it shows God can protect your children. See what the devil's doing? What an attack on the triune God when we look back at this. What an affront to the eternal Son of God, through whom everything was made, and to whom all glory and honor, dominion and power belongs forever and ever. Amen. There, sitting on the world throne, was known as the incarnation of the Lord of heaven and earth. Satan had set up a man of sin. Satan had set up an antichrist. Remember, 2 Thessalonians says, seated over all that's called God, or that's worship, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself to be God. That's an antichrist. You're starting to learn your God now. What do you think he's going to do in this situation? Flip out the lights. Just what he does. He hits the switch. Moses, I want you to walk out there, and I want you to stretch out your hands toward heaven. Put them up. And all of a sudden, as Moses does that, thick darkness comes. It goes dark. Now we know nations were talking about this by this time, that a temple of the light would be set up as a banner for the nations. But here's my point. Darkness was something that was going to be talked about in all the nations of the earth as God's judgment. This plague of darkness came at the end of a long teaching session now through all of these plagues about what? The human heart. The human heart. What should be the effect? You want to say to Pharaoh, what are you doing, man? Stop hardening your heart. Don't be stubborn. Stop refusing him who speaks. You realize the entire Bible applies this? Jesus used darkness extensively in his teaching. Extensively. In fact, in John chapter 12, you have the end of his teaching ministry to the Jewish nation. And then you have the events of the cross taking place, his leading up to that Passion Week there. But in John 12, he ends his teaching to the Jewish nation. And John 12 ends his teaching. You have essentially his last sermon to the Jewish nation. What do you think he said in his last sermon, last call? In John 12, we read that Jesus spoke and departed and was hidden. What were his last words? Put it this way. If this was the last sermon that Jesus ever chose for you to hear, it could be, by the way, what do you think he'd say? What would he choose to say to you? If you knew this was the last sermon you're going to hear, would you hear it differently right now? Did you pay attention? Would you still nitpick? I don't think so. Would you really listen? What would you do differently? Would you have regrets? Would you say, I wish I'd have listened? We're all used to this. We come here every week after week after week. We're here, we're challenged, and this goes on, and it's always gone on since the beginning of the world. This has always gone on. God has preserved his church, and he's preached, and he's preached, and he's preached, and he's preached. Here's his last sermon. Here's his last words to the Jewish nation. Last call. A little while longer, the light is with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he is going. While you have the light, believe the light, that you may become sons of light. Last sermon. It's Tuesday afternoon when he said it. Judgment day is the cross a few days away. All the while, Jesus has been among them doing powerful signs, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. He's raised the dead, and he's been saying, come to me, come to me. I'm the light. Come to me, he says. Final plea. Language of walk in the light means come to the light, believe in the light, stand in the light, enjoy the light, be forgiven by the light. Well, last call for Egypt. Here it is. Before permanent darkness would overtake, you have this three-day window. And that is the divine decree. That is what he had allotted left, 3 days. The next thing it says is that deep darkness came over all the land of Egypt for 3 days. It was a darkness that could be felt. No one could move or rise for 3 days. Next to death, this was awful. They had 3 days to taste what it was like to be away from the presence of God. They had 3 days to experience his withdrawal and what outer darkness is like. It's a plague that never goes away, it seems. What is all this describing? Nothing we ever want to face. The great day of the Lord, Zephaniah 1, is near. It is near. And it hastens quickly. The noise of the day of the Lord is bitter. There is mighty men. There mighty men shall cry out. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble, a distress, a day of devastation and desolation, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. Here I have to preach as a pastor what nobody wants to preach or we hear very little about today, but it's hell. I know of no description better in the scriptures for us to get an understanding of what hell is going to be like for people. We don't hear a lot about it, but Jesus talked a lot about it. I hear today almost incessantly, all Jesus was about is love. He was also warning about judgment. In almost every connection to hell, he spoke of people being cast into outer darkness. Nothing more terrible than what's described, totally separated from all light, alone in blackness forever. That's what separation from God is like. Whatever we wake up to in the morning and we enjoy light and we are able to walk in light and have everything held together is because his presence is here. He's not far from any of us.
You've been listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. Once again, 888-504-8805. Or contact us on the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. Connect with us on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station or subscribe to the AG Radio podcast in iTunes or use our free Android app. Thanks for listening. And remember, where sin abounded, grace abounded more.
Are you still there?
You can't live the Christian life by yourself. Even the Lone Ranger had a buddy. Jesus founded a community, people with whom to share the Christian faith and the Christian life. One place to find it is in the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway, Escondido. Sunday services 9:30 a.m. and 6 p.m. 760-745-1679. 760-745-1679. On the web, eurc.org. Don't be a Lone Ranger.